we had a guy in my class, violin player, fantastic violin player. He was my age, and he was like a wonder child.
Mm.
And I was watching him as he played just everything beautiful, and I thought, I can do the same on bass. And that was the moment I understood that music is not connected 100% to the instrument. Yes. Music is just music. And it was the moment I thought, I tried to make music on this big thing. I found it so interesting, just YouTube, new platform. And
yeah, and you know that they have hundreds of thousands of views now. I mean, a lot of them come from me.
My first vacation holidays was when I was 30.
Really?
Yeah. So then I thought, I can allow myself. So we went for a camping place to French Riviera. I couldn't practice for 3 weeks. But then I started to write the music, to compose the bass chords. Everything I composed happened in French Riviera.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Artist Room. Today, I'm so excited. Today, I'm talking to one of my biggest double bass heroes. Somebody I told you earlier, but I'm not kidding. Somebody I've listened to for hundreds of hours. One of my biggest idols, Boguslav Furtok.
Hello, thank you.
In case there's somebody listening or watching this, all bassists know you, but in case there's some other people, which I hope there are, watching this, can you quickly introduce yourself?
Thank you. I come from Poland, and after my studying in Poland, I came to Frankfurt, studied with Günter Klaus, and then got a job in Frankfurt Radio Symphony Orchestra as a principal bass player, which I'm continuing till now, and playing some solo concerts too.
Some fantastic ones.
Compose music also. Yeah, that's me.
One thing I was always curious about is in Poland, because there are quite a few really, really great Polish bass players. How did you get the idea to learn the bass, and who did you study with there? Was there like a big school, or is it just coincidence that so many great bassists come from there?
It happened that I wanted to go to music school, and I was 9, and when I went to music school, the school director said, you are too old for violin, you are too old for piano, which I loved, and he said, you can play bass or drums. And my God, what is bass? And my mother told me, you know, with drums you have no melody, so let's try bass. I was crying like 1 week long. I didn't know what is this, and I knew violin. Well, my parents were making music, not professionally.
Yeah.
So my sister was playing piano, so I knew piano. My mother played violin a little bit, but I've never seen bass before, and I was very scared.
And then when you tried bass for the first time?
I tried bass for the first time, and I said, never, never. It was not my case. But then later, we had a guy in my class, fantastic violin player. He was my age, and he was like a wonder child.
Mm.
And I was watching him as he played just everything beautiful, and I thought, I can do the same on bass. And that was the moment I understood that music is not connected 100% to the instrument. Yes. Music is just music. And it was the moment I thought, I tried to make music on this big thing. And it changed my understanding of instrument, of making music.
And how old were you when this point happened?
I was like 14, 15. So then it was the time I really started to practice or to search for the sound quality, and then just trying to produce a sound which is good to hear.
Thank you. me, it was not a violinist. Well, it was a lot of violinists and cellists also that inspired me, and a lot of singers. But for me, the main thing that motivated me were recordings online of the great bassists. And a lot of those were from you.
Thank you. That's what I didn't have when I was young.
Yeah.
First in Poland was nothing.
Yeah.
There was no YouTube, no internet, of course. And the one recording I had was a live recording of Gary Carr recital in Bergen in Norway. I was, wow, this is bass sound.
Yeah.
So like a very special moment.
Do you remember what pieces he played?
Yeah, he played like Sonnambula and beautiful. It was new. It was different. What I heard from in the school, what I heard a little bit. Live bass playing, it was totally different. So it also changed my understanding of bass sound.
He was, I think, the one for so many. I've talked to quite a few bassists by now, and his, I mean, he was probably one of the first ones to ever do like recordings.
Absolutely.
Like really good record. I mean, there is one of Kozowitzki, I think, of the second movement, but I mean, the recordings that actually got distributed that people would listen to.
Yes.
He was one of the first ones.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then, so you started practicing. Did you have a good teacher back then, or?
I was very lucky because when I was 17, a young bass player from Polish National Symphony Radio Symphony Orchestra, Waldemar Tamowski, he was 26. He just started to teach in a music school, and we met for the first time. He said, "I see you want to play, but you don't know how. Let's try to do something good. Let's try to build something together." And he was fantastic. He spent a lot of time with me. He sent me to competitions. He showed me how to work on music, on pieces. He was, for me, he's the best friend of mine now. And then when I finished this secondary school, this special music school in Polish system still exists.
Yeah.
And I went to the Universal Music Academy, the same building in Katowice, and I said to rector, to director, I want to study with him.
Yeah.
So he got the job with me as a professor.
Well, he wasn't professor.
He wasn't. He was just in the secondary school, and I said, I will study here, but only with him. So later he got the professor title, but then he was just, it was fantastic.
Oh, that's incredible. So you were lucky you found the teacher for you.
Absolutely.
And then you finished your studies there?
I finished we cooperated fantastic, and he told me about competitions. So I went to many. So every year was just one bass competition.
Yeah.
After winning Mark Neukirchen in East Germany at that time, 89, I heard my friend Christine Hook, who was also a prize winner, and I loved her playing. And I asked her, "Where do you study?" "Oh, I study in Frankfurt, Günter Klaus." "Mm-hmm." I thought, that's the idea.
With Günter Klaus, yeah.
Yes, that's the idea. So I wrote a letter to Günter Klaus. "I would like to study with you." "Oh, it's difficult, difficult, difficult." And then I went to Geneva for the bass competition. I came back home with the prize. And then I got a letter from him, "Now you can study with me." So I was really lucky and came to Frankfurt and studied concert exam. This means 2 years.
Yeah,
with Günter Klaus,
which is quite tough. I mean, in most schools, because you in the juries for the exams, you have all the instruments there, so you don't need to just be a bass player. That's good. You need to actually make some great music.
It happened. I was very happy. I remember I played Frank violin sonata.
Wow.
And someone looked, "Is this sonata?" "Yes, I'm sorry, this is this sonata, but I just practiced this now, so I played for you."
Some extra research, and I found at that time you were also already with your wife Eva, you were playing the Frank Sinatra in a recital in the Alte Oper in Frankfurt.
That's true. Yes.
That's incredible. That, yeah. For back then, I mean, there were always a few good bass players, but when it came to solo playing and to the repertoire, to expanding it to something like Frank Sinatra, that must have been quite
big
special
challenge.
For the time. Yeah.
Big challenge, but I thought this is playable on bass. Not everything. I don't like to play everything just to show that I'm able to play. I search always for pieces which sound well.
It's the same for me. Like, why arrange something if the music needs to be there?
Exactly.
Or maybe even complemented, I think, for in Frank Sinatra. And the first movement is tricky as hell. But really? The second movement on the bass is, I mean, it's
great music. And why not if it works? Yeah.
Well, you definitely make it work. That recording, I listened a lot of that.
But that time, Günter Klaus told me, when you practice Frank Sinatra, you never get a job in the orchestra. You have to practice classical concerto. Yes, of course I will. So I started also to practice this Dittersdorf concerto.
Was it back then only Dittersdorf, or did people play Van Hal, Hofmeister, Sperger?
That time was mostly Dittersdorf.
Wow.
So I practiced Dittersdorf, and I got the job with Dittersdorf.
What is always interesting to me, and we have talked about it already a bit beforehand, when it comes to the kind of sound you have, I mean, bassists will know that, but maybe to cellists and violinists, that's more new thing to think about. There are so many different ways to overall produce a bass sound. And in countries and traditions, that differs tremendously. Like in the US, they have a very direct, concrete sound, mostly even in the orchestras. And in Germany, it's all about this round, rich sound, which, you know, everything has its own qualities. And you have a sound, at least now, it would be interesting to know, how was it back then? How was it in Poland? How did it change in Frankfurt? Or did it change? Or did you adapt for additions? But your sound is now is a very, very direct sound, very clear sound, a very brilliant sound. That obviously for solo playing, if you want to be heard and understood in a big hall, that's exactly. what you need. Is that the kind of sound you learned and developed in Poland already? Or
yes, it was the idea of my sound, of me listening to that time to Heifetz, to Perlman, the best violin players. I thought, why should I play different? Why should I sound different? It's just lower.
Yeah.
But I was always fascinated with the brilliance of violin sound and later cello. That's why. And I never change it. For instance, orchestra playing. Yes, maybe I'm the only one with more direct sound. But I say, I also play 4-string bass.
Yeah.
I say when we are 8 players and 7 of us have 5-string basses, I use my 4-string more focus. It mixed perfectly for me, so no problem. In case, I told you already, when as a principal bassist have a solo, like 2 notes in 2 years, I want that people can hear me.
Yeah, although you did, like, it was Mahler 1, the famous Mahler 1 solo some time ago, and you posted a recording of that, and that was really quite something. I loved listening to that.
No, you played for a very big hall, and we played in Asia, in Korea, Japan.
Yeah.
Really big concert halls, and so it must be. Some conductors were surprised. Oh, you sound different. I'm sorry, this is me.
Yeah, but actually that depends on orchestras. In Vienna, for example, most of the time the principal basses also play 4-string, and they also have some basses that sound more dark, some that sound more bright. And in the US, I've talked to a lot of basses there, that's something they actually kind of value quite a bit, to have some that play them with a more dark sound, some that play with more direct sound, to have kind of this variety, which makes the overall sound also in a way more present and more flexible.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's what I think.
Yeah,
and you have a mixture of basses are so different.
And it can absolutely work. But when you studied with Günter Klaus, was that at any point something where he said, you know, change your...
He got crazy about working together. You know, yeah. I brought on every lesson, every week, new piece. He didn't want to repeat. Next one, next.
Wow.
He was just working. I think he enjoyed it. We became also really good friends now.
Yeah, and for all those who don't know, most bassists know that, but Günter Klaus, if we look at how many principal bassist professors that now exist that were his students, it was one of the Absolutely. Main bass pedagogues in Germany yeah. for a long time.
He worked on music. He never told me you sound too bright or too, no. That was not the subject.
Oh, that's fantastic. Music
and it was great.
And in the audition, you also went for it. And they were open for it.
They were open for it. And I played Arpeggione Sonata instead of Romantic Concerto, which is usually the case.
Wow.
It happened
and they apparently liked you. So that's fantastic. I think for me, that's my view. I mean, I love all the traditions that are out there, and I think they should exist and they have their value, and it's important to keep them.
Yes.
But I also like variety, not only with sound, but also with repertoire. And, you know, when we come to the repertoire, not only did you do arrangements of new pieces, but you also compose quite a lot. How did that start? When did that start, and why?
Well, I started to compose when I was a child already. I wrote the first pieces for bass and piano, which was so difficult I didn't play it till now. Just crazy. And well, I spent a lot of time with synthesizers and making pop music.
Really?
Making electronic symphonic music.
Is there something of that? Is there some of that out there? Can we listen to some of that?
No. But that was just my second night life.
Yeah.
I couldn't stop with music, but I spent a lot of hours with synthesizers and later computers. And then we started to play bass quartet like 25 years ago here in Frankfurt. And
was that already there?
Yeah.
Flying basses.
Flying basses, and I thought, why not? I can write something for us, and so.
That's when you really started.
Yeah.
Okay.
I started to make music, to write music on the paper. Many pieces for bass quartet, and last composition was a bass concerto.
Yeah. Also online on YouTube, yes. Maybe we can even show some excerpts of your recordings. That would be incredible. Especially the bass quartet. To me, that was so impressive because that is the perfect example of how sound can mix. You have colleagues, you have one with a five string there, even, or at least some of the recordings, he plays a five string.
Yes. You can find it on YouTube.
Yes, on YouTube. I think. I saw there were somewhere one is a five string. And then you see some of this darker sound. And then Christian Breiker, also incredible bassist, obviously right next to you, who... I mean, also you made the parts not so easy for all the instruments. And then in the high register, you have this.
It just looks difficult. It's very comfortable to play.
Oh, I tried them. I mean, I played your the Andante Elegiaco.
Oh, really?
And what an insanely beautiful piece.
Thank you. It was a piece I composed for a wedding of of Simon Backhaus, who is a member of Bay Squad and now orchestra.
I played with him actually.
You know him.
In the WDR once, we did a gig together there. And yeah, okay. Fantastic.
This was for his
wedding.
Wedding, yeah.
Wow. That's such a gorgeous piece. I have to say, like, that's if I get married, sorry to
then you play for you.
My future wife, but that would be
bass music,
bass quartet at the wedding. Yes, nothing more beautiful out there. So you played it at his wedding, yes, the bass quartet. Yeah. Nice, oh, that's incredible. Did he also play, or did he then?
No.
Oh, that's really great. But you also did. Besides, was it only music for bass, or did you also do other pieces? I mean, there's also bass trios and concerto, but what
mostly,
else?
Mostly for bass, yeah.
But also some other pieces?
Yeah, there's a duo, Fantasy for Two Basses and Piano, which I composed for my masterclass in Utah, in USA.
Which you recorded there on the Kozowitzki car bass.
Exactly.
Yes.
That was a composition especially for this moment. We played together with Professor Eric Hansen from BYU.
Eric, actually, you know him very well. I'm going to be there in October, actually.
Oh.
For a project also with that bass. I don't know if I can announce it. I think I probably can. I will record Kozowitzki concerto and the four pieces on the Kozowitzki bass.
Fantastic.
It's going to be fun. I'm sorry if that's too nerdy, but how is that bass, actually?
Very small.
Yeah?
In the first moment, super easy. In second moment, different, strange, but playable.
Yeah, but playable. Okay, that's gonna be
great instrument.
Overall, great instrument.
Absolutely.
Let's see. I'm looking forward to that.
You will have fun with this bass.
And with the bass quartet, actually, how was it? You know, I saw a lot of recordings. We played in a lot of concerts. How did you make that possible? Like, and I know now I used to be only freelance musician, and now with your teaching shop, I still play a lot of freelance gigs. It's not easy to make that happen.
It's difficult. First, we all are members of orchestra, yeah. So we have to find time for practicing, for organizing the concerts, which makes Uli, our friend. Yeah, and then just you have to organize your time to prepare the concert and to travel and play.
But also the organizers, they were open to bass quartet.
Every time.
Yeah?
Very open and very happy.
That's, you know, I also now play some concerts with my colleagues from Nuremberg with bass quartets. And I am surprised. First of all, I thought, you know, it's difficult to convince people. They're always afraid that the bass, oh God, can that sound? Even if you have a lot of recordings out there, organizers are often very conservative.
Mm-hmm.
But when it happens,
they're happy.
They love it. The audience always, it's for me, I almost never get reactions like that. And you were like, was bass quartet like a thing back then? Or like now, bass quartet, many people get the idea to do it because, for example, you're recording, so bass quartet, wow, that can work. Back then, were there some bass quartets before recordings before that you could listen to, or was this one of the first to exist?
When I was a student in Katowice, I already started to play bass quartet with my friends, students. Then I went for 87 to Bayreuth Jugendfestspieltreffen, International Youth Orchestra, and we have a bass quartet. We had a bass quartet with two players from Germany and two from Poland. So it was the first cooperation. Polish Germany was fantastic.
Yeah,
we played also on TV, German TV live. So it was great. So
wow,
that was the idea to continue this. So when I started to work in orchestra, I saw the musicians are fantastic, so why not Let's try.
Thing that's also for me, we started talking about that earlier and I said stop, we need to keep that for later. One thing that was always, that's the main reason, yeah, why I know you so well, is your recordings. How did that start? When did that start? Like, this one thing is to do CDs, and I know you also record yourself, like you work on some projects with audio engineers, but often you do the recording yourself. And also YouTube, you were one of the first ones to upload there. We looked back, like, how many years back you already started uploading videos. You were like one of the base pioneers online.
I found it so interesting. YouTube, new platform and the possibility of, you know, you don't have to make a CD and pay so much money for it. You just make a recording, put it there, and everyone can see it. Wow, that was new, like 25 years ago.
Yeah, and you know that they have hundreds of thousands of views now. I mean, a lot of them come from me. No, hundreds of thousands, I don't know. But yeah, and all the bases around the world. Like, when I, now we had a class concert in Würzburg a couple of days ago, and then they asked, yeah, so what do you do the next day? And I was like, yeah, I will do podcast recordings. And with whom? And I said, yeah, Bohuslav Furtok. And they were like, oh, wow, that is, yeah. Because everyone knows those recordings. But with the CDs and with the recording yourself, how did that start?
It started when I was at school already. I always was fascinated from technique and recordings.
Yeah.
As a little child, we had a big recording machine, so I was singing to the microphone, and I was fascinated. I can hear myself.
Yeah.
You know, different times. But this fascination was already there, and then when I was already a bass player, I recorded our class concerts with a band machine, with a cassette recorder, which young people don't know now. And then when I was a student in Poland, our bass room was next to this recording studio.
Oh, okay.
I was practicing a lot, but when I was making breaks, I went there for a coffee to the sound engineer. Was an older man, very nice guy, and he, come to me, let's drink coffee, and may I check this, may I see, can you show me how to cut, can you show me a real tapes?
Oh, back
so
then, yeah.
I started to help him a little bit, and then I could stand the microphones on the stage, put the microphones, and I did already one concert as a sound engineer. I was so happy. And I found it so
at the university, you
yeah.
already kind
as
of
as a bass
working, yeah?
student. I so I thought this is what they like to do. And
yeah.
Then when I was already in orchestra, my first money I earned, I spent for best microphones and mixing console and mixer, and started to make recordings.
Wow, that, and back then, you know, for me, actually, now also, that was something I started to learn, because I'm also fascinated, because, yeah, in the end, that's what made me want to become a musician, like, professionally. Before, music was a hobby. I enjoyed playing bass, you know, it was fun, but it was never like, I want to do this. And the recordings, that they are what made me want to do it. And that's why I also do now recordings, because on the one hand, it's different. I love live concerts.
Absolutely.
And I think this moment you experience something, it will never be repeated,
of course,
and this is unique. But recordings for me have these two major advantages. One thing is, no, actually three, people all over the world can see it, that's great. I can watch it again and again and again and again. And there are some recordings that I've watched so many times because I'm so fascinated. And I didn't watch it for like a year. And then I watch it again. And like, oh, what is phrasing, this vibrato, this, how does he do that? Okay, wow. You know, I can learn so much from that, and it can shape my musical identity so much. And it's also when I do my own, the third thing, my own recordings, is who knows what happens at some point, you know? Maybe break my hand and I can never play again.
We never know.
Yeah, and there you have something that will exist for, well, forever we can never know, but probably for as long as we live, these recordings are there and people can
maybe listen. Longer, we hope.
Yes, yes, yes.
That was the idea also of mine, to do something which stays longer.
Yeah.
And which reaches people who cannot come to the live concert. That's a nice side of internet of these times now.
That's the good side. Yeah,
that's a good side.
Because that, I think, especially with bass, to me, like we still not like at the same level as violin or piano when it comes to the presence as a solo instrument in the concert scene. And how are people supposed to know? Right, I often think, how are people supposed to know what is possible? How are they supposed to get inspired or motivated? Or just, you know, maybe an organizer convinced to make the program a bass recital or bass quartet recital or bass concerto if they cannot listen to it. Yeah. And when I grew up in Vienna, now and then, like every 5 years maybe, there would be a bass recital. Mm. But
it changed now. There are more players like you. Fantastic. And it's changed a little bit, and the quality, I think the level is higher.
Overall, I think there were always these exceptional players.
Yeah.
Like, I think, you know, for example, you, when, like, in your generation, there were, like, maybe a handful that had this incredible musicality and mastery of the instrument. Now, of course, it's changing on the one hand because just the average is rising and people see, okay, oh, I need to get better to get a job or win a competition. We have recordings to inspire us, because also as a player, I think if you want to demand more of yourself, but you think, hey, I'm already better than everyone, like, then why should you continue? And then you find a recording from somebody who plays, you know, when I listen to the Yo Bottesini CD, for example, with the concertos. Especially like the F sharp minor concert, and I listen to how brilliant technically you solve everything while at the same time, to me it's so strong, it's so on top of the music. It's not just technically and bass, but it's musically just really on top of things, and that motivates me then to say, okay, no, I need to get better. But you, was it violinist, or what was your main, like, how did you get the idea to play on such a level, to play all this repertoire, just pure inner drive, or?
Just my heart told me, let's make music as well as possible, just music, pure. I always say, I'm not a bass lover.
Yeah.
This is not my love, this is just a tool to make music. And it happened that I am a bass player. I see sometimes young people, they love the bass, and that's fine.
Yeah.
I can't. But I love to make music. And I started with bass when I was 9.
Yeah.
Before I could play piano.
But often that's, you know, like Bottesini also hadn't planned on it. It was coincidence.
Yeah.
And how happy we can be now that coincidence.
I'm also
happened.
Very happy, and it's okay.
Yeah, I also had these, like, for me, when I started with the bass, I was fascinated with the bass. But then I also sometimes I was like, then I would listen to the other instruments and be like, oh, damn, you know, all these things they can do. But to me, actually playing the cello more and more also in concerts, that's what made me love the bass even more. I also love the cello. It's so much more brilliant. It can be much more forceful, can show even bigger contrasts. But this richness, this round, warm sound, that's in the end
just bass. This is bass.
And that's something I think certain repertoire can show really well also in arrangements. And we talked about it earlier, one of the arrangements that you recorded a couple of years ago that to me is like, it's, I always say this is, in my eyes, it's one of the best bass recordings ever. It's your Bloch Shlomo. To do that.
My favorite piece, absolutely. Well, many years ago I had a recording with Lynn Herrer, number one for me, cellist, and I thought this is the piece, this is a bass piece. How beautiful and fantastic he played. I thought I have to try it.
Yeah.
So I tried, and quite soon I played with orchestra and Katowice Philharmonic Orchestra. So I thought it's possible.
Yeah.
And then I had to wait like 25 years to get the chance to make this recording with my orchestra.
You know, what I think is incredible in your case is not only that you do recordings, but you also record with your own orchestra, which is, you know, Frankfurt Radio Symphony. It is one of the top orchestras.
This is really top orchestra, and I'm so happy that was possible.
Did you push for that? Did they say, hey, why not?
I didn't push, I just asked.
You just asked, and they were like, yeah?
I just asked if I could do some recordings as a principal bass player. So maybe that was just a little help. Oh, let's see. But it was possible.
Wow.
Yeah, and then we plan another CD, another recording. Part of them already, like Dubin Concerto is already done, and a new concerto written for me from my friend Andreas Hepp, who is a percussionist in our orchestra and composer.
Wow.
Very, very good piece for bass. And I plan to record my own bass concerto and Carmen Fantasy von Sankey. So that's a plan for
the next
near future.
So that's a big announcement for the bass world, but also for the non-bassists. I can really recommend, listen to those recordings. You will hear something you did not expect could be possible like that. And not just the orchestra recordings, but also the quartets and the recordings with piano. And, you know, there I have to tell you a funny story. When I was like, 13, 14, and I got so into bass, I said to my parents, you know, if I ever get married, I want to marry a pianist so I can play all the pieces with her, just like you did. It happens for now. I'm together for 5 years with a fantastic pianist. I totally forgot about the whole story, actually. I didn't plan for it to come that
you
way.
See?
But I saw you played with her already since you were 21 or something.
Since 88 we played together.
Did you study together back then in Poland, or how did you meet?
Accidentally, she was working as the official pianist accompanist in the music academy. And I knew she was very well, she was good, and she was famous. But, you know, maybe not the best pianist come to accompany the bassist.
Yeah.
And it happened, she got this few hours, for accompanying bassist. And she had, there is someone crazy, that was me, who was trying to make music. So how it started. And it was not easy, because she accompanied by a best violin professor.
Mm.
His sister is a fantastic violin player. So they had duos since years and played many concerts. And the violin professor. And then she came to us, and I was so proud I played someone. And how is it? Forget it.
No!
she was not so happy with my happiness. And it was fantastic, a great collaboration and learning from each other.
Demanded more.
I had
more
to show
more.
Her that everything is possible. It's not a violin, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But she always said, "Let's make music. Forget the bass. Do it as good as possible."
So it was kind of really maybe another influence that pushed you to go further beyond.
Pushed me from the other side, different side than the bass professor, bass teacher. And it was great.
Well, yeah,
it's still great.
We talked about it earlier, and I'm a professor, but I'm also studying at the Krumberg Academy, which is sometimes a weird thing, being, you know, teaching and being the one who tells people, kind of tries to tell them at least what to do, what could hopefully make them better, and then to be a student again. And there in Krumberg, the fun thing is, yeah, I don't work with any bassists, I work with cellists, pianists, conductors. And this idea of, you know, but also before, I often worked with a good friend of mine, Emmanuel Technovorian. Mm. He played often with your orchestra, or conducts also here now. And often I played for him. Like, once I remember, this was a very distinctive moment. I played Schubert, Arpeggione Sonata for him. And then he was like, yeah, this place, yeah, you know, should be much more elegant. But it's so difficult. And he's like, I don't care. If it's too difficult, don't play it. If you cannot make it sound beautiful.
Because the public don't care.
Yes.
You go on the stage and the public expects music, something nice, something. And you cannot say, I'm sorry, this is difficult, I try. It doesn't work. So that's our job, to show the music on this. And not as a bass player, as a musician.
That's probably for me also the best description of how you play. Like, there are bass players that are great bass players. And I always said, but what you do is, it's just fantastic music. It's also great bass playing. But it is, to me, and that's why, you know, that's why I still, up to this day, I listen all the time to your recordings. And one thing that impresses me also is, you stay in shape on the bass. Like, besides, how long have you been playing in the orchestra now?
30 years.
And I used to, for a couple of years, play more and more orchestra gigs. I often played as principal bass in different German orchestras, but then also in London. And I found it quite hard to manage that, to keep this clear, brilliant sound, to still continue shaping every note and to not fall in. Because in the orchestra, you don't, the specific, tiniest little difference in your sound color doesn't matter. It's more about the whole big gesture, about this is it's also a very difficult thing to do, and very challenging, and a great world to explore, but a different world.
Absolutely.
Is how do you manage to
just
stay so well?
Practicing every day.
Every day,
never stop. Yeah.
Wow.
This belongs to my life, and when I don't touch my bass, the day I feel not good.
Really, every day.
Every day. Just every day.
Wow.
Even if it's just 1 hour.
Yeah.
Or half an hour. But to warm up a little bit. To check if I still sound. You know, after orchestra, it's completely different way of playing orchestra. Yes. And every day I have to come back to myself on my solo instrument. This is like every day, 15 minutes, 20 minutes, coming back to my vision of sound. I need it to keep maybe this level of joy.
Yeah, I mean, it's still, you know, as you see often, bassists who, when they were like in their 30s, still fantastic. And at some point it goes away. But I listened to your most recent recordings, and I think they're some of the strongest.
Thank you. Time is coming. I know. I'm realistic.
Yeah.
The time is coming when probably I stop to playing. I said to myself, when I notice it doesn't work, I stop.
Oh, that's good.
But it's still working, so I'm very happy.
Although I think often people don't notice anymore. But maybe your wife will tell you. But I hope you continue for many more years.
Sure, thank you. Yeah, it's still a lot of fun, and I have fun with practicing. You know, some people spend, I think, after so many years in orchestra, so many years playing, you get a little bit tired, or you get used to do it.
Yeah.
And maybe you need something else. I have these thoughts and moments, I would like to make a trip. Then I think, but then I don't practice. So it's still a fight inside of me.
Yeah.
should I make a trip 3 days or better just take a rest and practice a little bit? And mostly I stay with my bass.
Or you do the trip and you practice at the same time.
I have a little neck with one string. This is my journey bass, just a neck with one string, which I can take with me and at least practice left hand.
Wow.
Good idea.
That's insane. So it's no sound, just
no sound. Hilarion told me, write a concerto for this neck, because I showed him, look how I practice. Oh, great. Write a concerto. It's a good idea. Maybe I do it just for...
percussion piece, you know. Or if you go back to your electronic music ideas, include that.
Good idea. Thank you.
Is this something you at any point think you might go for again?
Yeah.
Electronic music?
Yep. I do it all the time.
You do it all the time?
You know, bass practicing is day time. Night time is doing something different, but still music.
Wow, that's incredible. But you know, it's a certain level of craziness to say, okay, now I need to practice every day. But I think sometimes we need that.
I'm not this crazy. No, it's just to, you know.
Just fascinating.
You feel, even for next day orchestra rehearsal, you feel much more comfortable. When you stop practicing, you get pain. You have some problems with fingers, muscles. It's just for, well, I'm still active musician in orchestra, and I, as a principal, I should be in good condition, good shape.
And that helps you also, like pain-wise, injury-wise, that you have no.
I do have a lot of pain, of course. I think like every musician.
At some point, yeah.
But well, it belongs to.
Yeah, you know, for me, the practicing and maybe going for a trip, that was something I had to learn in my relationship, actually. For 6 years, I used to never not practice on a day, except if I was traveling for a concert or something and was in the plane. And physically, there was no way to get a bass to practice on. But I would for 6 years. I was not one day. And then I, you know, my girlfriend at some point said, you know, I want to go on a vacation. And I'm like, but I need to practice. and then she was the one who convinced me to say, okay, I can go a few days without. The first vacation was crazy. Like, it was I think 4 days. And to me back then, the idea of 4 days without the bass was so ridiculous.
That's strange. My first vacation holidays was when I was 30.
Really?
Yeah. So then I thought I can allow myself. So we went for a camping place to French Riviera. And that was the moment I didn't have the neck. I couldn't practice for 3 weeks. But then I started to write the music, to compose the bass quartets. Everything I composed happened in French Riviera. That was the best time.
And did you have a piano or something, or just from
just
the
paper and
paper and
pen
and mind to think about it?
Wow! So really everything I composed there, it was just the nature and the beauty of this place.
Still often to compose new pieces, or
I can compose only there. That's why I have to go there.
Really, everything, all the pieces, everything is there.
Everything comes from Saint-Tropez.
Wow, oh, that's interesting.
So I find a place for composing.
That's something I often also do. Weirdly enough, when I travel, and I go on a vacation, and I don't take the bass, which now actually I do enjoy, to be honest, to now and then have a week, because then when I go back, I'm so hungry to go for it. And sometimes I love also the bass, but for me the bass is also only a part of music. Mm. I love the bass. I've always loved the bass. Well, most of the time, sometimes you have your fights, you know.
Of course.
But most of the time, I love the bass, and now I love the bass. But it's, for me, it's also, it's in the end a part of music. And music for me is much more. And a lot of what I do, I try to compose a bit, but composing is something I feel I need to do more before I really publish and perform the piece. Sometimes in some smaller concerts, you can hear actually pieces mm-hmm. I compose, but not in the big ones yet. But I arrange a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And often that I do at the vacations, because doing no music whatsoever for a week or two.
Impossible.
Yeah. Yeah, and exactly. That's something some people are like, isn't it unhealthy? But I think, no, it's, if it you know, it's not like they say, can you not stop working? But that's not, also, that's not work.
It's just, yeah, this is what we need as musicians. And I heard you were fantastic.
Oh, thank you.
Wow. Continue, please.
Yes, we get
more repertoire.
There's some crazy stuff that's gonna come out. I can tell you later. This is I will not announce it yet. But some of the most crazy stuff that I did is, well, I think that the really crazy stuff is just starting. Mm. Sometimes I'm a bit scared. I make an arrangement and I think, in my mind, I think if that is somehow physically possible to realize, it could be so great. But I'm sometimes not sure. Is it possible at all? like when I did the Bachakon, for example, it took me like 6 years of revising it again and again and adapting things to get it to the point where I was like, okay, no, it's and Frank's Sonata, I used to do it. I gave up. I listened to your recording. Also, Bojo Paracik was one of the ones who managed it. And I was like, oh, damn, no, I couldn't pull it off back then. Maybe I will give it another shot at some point. But and there I admired your recording. It's just this idea of not letting the instrument and its limitations, which exist.
Of course.
But also its strengths, which exist.
Yeah.
But making sure the limitation do not limit the music, while at the same time the strengths benefit the music. And doing that with a piece like a violin sonata, it is challenging.
Mm.
But I have a lot of inspiration to do that. Back at that time, were there a lot of bassists who would arrange big pieces from other instruments? And did you sometimes just already get sheet music from other bassists to arrange it, or did you also make the arrangements yourself?
I made my arrangements for my recordings. There was a CD with cello or violin pieces.
Yes,
Bossois. These are all, it's just 2 octaves lower.
With piano pieces also. Chopin Nocturne, yes. For example.
Yes, that was Lynn Harrell who played with us as a soloist, and he played this for Encore. And wow, this is so beautiful. Let's try on bass.
Yeah, why not? That's what I always think. I listen to a piece and I'm like, maybe some Liszt piece even, and some Chopin, some...
There are a lot of music which is okay for this beautiful instrument.
And you have planned now a couple of orchestra recordings, also Tubin. You already did, but it's not released yet. But it's I'm very excited about that. I think that is because we do also have great pieces for the bass that are not played so often. Mm-hmm. Actually, that's something I want to also ask, because many people didn't in the past know what pieces there exist. For example, I talked to Peteris Vasks.
Mm-hmm.
He was a bassist, actually. Many people don't know. He used to be a bassist, professional one, and he didn't know back then that there are actually a lot of great bass sonatas, and he played them, for example, Sanson's Cello Concerto and stuff like that for his final exam. On the other hand, you also, besides the arrangements, also played a lot of the repertoire that we have, like Montag Sonata. Just yesterday, I recorded a podcast. I talked to Phoebe Russell, we talked about Montag Sonata and talked write the pieces, and she said and then I heard a few recordings and I didn't know about it before, and if it wasn't for those recordings, and she just found out about it recently. You did that already many years ago, and your
I thought, if I plan to make a recordings, I do it of course for myself because it makes me happy like everyone.
Yeah.
But I do it for younger people who are learning, who are searching for new pieces they don't know.
Yeah.
Just as inspiration, of course, that's the main target.
Well, that really worked, though, I have to say.
Also, my teacher in Poland told me, you know, Boguś, don't be crazy with playing only Frank Sonata and similar, because nobody will do it. He also told me this, try to make a bass repertoire recordings, which is more useful for young people. That was good advice.
It also, I think, with on the one hand, finding out about pieces that just exist, or maybe finding out, oh, they can actually sound like that.
Yeah,
that's why I often certain pieces I say I don't want to record, like Bottesini B minor concerto, as your recording, which is fantastic. There's Ibrahimov, which is fantastic. There's so many good recordings of that concerto where I'm like, why?
I think still the world is waiting for Dominic's recording.
Well, actually, there is one where I play with Georg Breinschmidt, and he plays jazz bass and. That one is out there. That one they can listen to. I will not go back to the normal anymore after that. or you know, but basically with most of the standard concertos, I'm like, do I need to, or are there already some recordings where I'm just like, no, I don't need to touch it anymore. People can listen to that, and that's it. But one thing is also, you also said earlier, you recorded a new piece that was written for you. Did you work a lot with other composers as well in the past, and do you have more plans on that area?
Just in this case with this one,
yeah,
we cooperated. He's a percussionist, and I told him, please write me a bass concerto, we'll record it here.
Yeah.
Oh, and he spent hours listening to me, to me. I show him what I like, how I sound, where I sound better.
Yeah.
What is good for me, which he noticed everything. He recorded with his phone. And then I got the music. Of course, we cooperated. And finally, I got this piece. And wow, it's great, great written for bass. I sent it to my teacher in Poland. It's one of the best modern concertos. The bass is shown. Not the bass, the music is shown on the bass.
Yeah.
Everywhere. And every position, every
register seems register, properly. Yeah. That's a big thing I also think with bass concertos. It's one thing to have a good composer write for bass, which, you know, we have a Henze concerto, we have a Francais concerto, but great composers, but for the bass it's just... You know,
did they give, once, that was 20 years ago,
yeah,
from American composer Brian Fennelly, bass concerto with Polish Radio National Symphony Orchestra. Very good piece. This was first new concerto I did, and then was the second one here in Frankfurt.
So those two?
Those two, and maybe something new will come.
So we definitely every bass is probably very excited about that. But yeah, I think it's so important to then work with the composers to make sure they know how to write for bass. Because yeah, in Francais or Henze, in those cases, I think it's they're not horribly written for the bass, but they're
very difficult
and not so thankful.
Like in Tubin, I thought Tubin, I had a story. I don't know if it's true, but when he was ready with the piece, the bass player said, "It's impossible to play." He said, "I don't care." Just, I don't care. I don't change any note in this piece. And that was when I started to practice for the recording. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Impossible. But after time, it worked out.
I'm so excited about that one. And you know, I'm also working now with a lot of composers. I'm trying a lot of the composers who also were bassists at some point, because they, of course, know. And yeah, here we have a composer who is a bassist also that wrote something. And I mean, the recording, there is already a recording out there of your concerto.
That's just live recording.
Exactly.
That's like a test for me.
Yeah.
I just finished to write this music. I was finished with the orchestra score and had the opportunity to play with a small orchestra. It was just for me to check if it's... The idea was, since many years, to compose a big romantic piece, which we don't have. Really big. And it's just like 42 minutes piece, four movements. And I was very happy with the idea. I just did it.
Nice.
Did it for me. And maybe there will be someone who will play this.
So on your plan, you will publish the sheet music and everything. Publishing actually more and more of the quartets. I saw, you know, we're working with the same platform with String Virtuoso, but you also in the past with Hofmeister published. So do you plan on publishing all the bigger pieces you wrote, or did you already actually, and then maybe didn't see everything yet?
I did most of my pieces, and of course, if I think it's okay, and I think my last concerto is okay.
Yeah, well, I think so, definitely.
I will publish it.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. And the bass quartets, I thought, like five or how many are there?
Five.
Is
we never played number 3 and 4 and 1. We just recorded number 2 and 5. I thought, you know, like you'd never hear, I don't know, Schubert's Second Symphony or...
Yeah.
I'm not Schubert, I'm sorry. But I thought number 1 was just trying to make a piece for basses. I think it's not bad. I still have to maybe check once again. And then I thought number 3 and 4, this is too similar to number 2.
Mm.
And then the first number 5 was completely different. And number 6 is waiting.
It's waiting?
It's here.
There's going to be more.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, I think... Oh, before we get thrown out of the room, I think this is a fantastic point to end. And I just want to say, not just thank you for taking your time to talk to me. It's been really a huge pleasure. And it's been a kind of, you know, you asked me earlier, why do I do this? Well, for many reasons. But one of the reasons is I get to talk to some of the people that I really just wanted to talk to for a long time. That I mean, we met briefly, but never got the time to sit down. You've been one of the biggest inspirations for me growing up, and you still are to this day. That I get to do this, huge thank you. And also a huge thank you just for doing actually the stuff that you do, publishing all the pieces, the recordings, and also continuing to do this. Because I think we're now living at a time where change is happening.
Mm.
In the music scene, also in the bass scene, but in the overall music scene, more of the instruments that were, you know, just not solo instrument or not considered solo instruments are now coming out. It's not just the basses, bassoon, trumpet, percussion, and this is happening only, well, the bass part at least of it is happening only because of people like you, who not only get great orchestras to record a repertoire with or to perform it with, but then who push and continue uploading, creating new things. Creating a variety of things. Without that, how should people know? So thank you for doing that, and
thank
I look
you.
Forward to everything you're going to do in the future.
Thank you very much. It was very nice. Thank you.